Welcome into a new episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey Conway, and I am joined by one of my favorite analysts in the NFL, and that is ESPN's Lewis Riddick. Lewis, thank you so much for joining us. I'm a big fan of what you do all year long analyzing the NFL, but specifically on draft weekend, because I know you play a big role in ESPN's coverage of it and have been following you on social media for a long time and really enjoy, you know, some of your tweets that bring up prospects that maybe I haven't heard of. So we just wanted to get Bengals fans and our listeners caught up to speed with some of your thoughts heading into this draft. So, I mean, can you believe that it's, you know, here, it's less than a week away at this point?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, Kelsey. I remember it feels like I was just down at the Senior Bowl. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of wild how when you kind of like lock into like your little bunker or wherever it is that you watch tape and stuff, and you know, you have 8, 9, 10, 11 hour days, 12 hour days where literally you're watching tape until your eyes, like you just can't watch anymore. The time flies by. Right. And then, you know, the combine comes and we hit a couple pro days. But yeah, it's going to be fun. Kansas City's kind of, they're really looking forward to it. The whole city is.
So what I think is unique about your role is not everyone that is a draft analyst gets to be sitting at the desk with the reaction when the news comes of these teams.
Sure.
Pick. And so for you, I'm sure that means that you have to know a lot. You're probably not an expert on every single player, but you've got to have a good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how many players would you say you at least study enough to know maybe one or two talking points when, you know, yeah, it's the fourth round and the team takes someone that you don't really know that well?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, just from a planning perspective, the first time I did the draft for TV, you know, ESPN was kind of like, look, you just need to, you know, just let's look, let you focus on like the top 75 to 100 people. And then on the third day, you know, just give kind of big picture viewpoints if you don't know people. And I wasn't always comfortable with that because I don't like when guys get called and you're like, well, who the hell's that? I don't know who that is, you know. So I just started upping my work, you know, in terms of the number of people. And I think right now I can comfortably, you know, with the way I like to watch it and do it, I'd say I'm probably, come draft day, I'm always like around somewhere between 200 to 220, wow, which is a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people. You know, Mel and Todd and those guys have an army of people that help them with preparation. And that's what they do year round, which is cool. And that's exactly what they're supposed to do. But I think for me, yeah, to be able to have working knowledge of about 200, 220 people puts me at a good spot.
Well, that's why I like following you and your comments. Obviously, you know, Mel and Todd and Daniel Jeremiah, everyone, you know, they do such a good job. But I think because you follow every team in the NFL so closely, because you talk about them daily and you used to call a lot of the games, that you know team fits. I think better than anyone. So I think that gives, for me, my ears always kind of perk up when you talk, because I know you actually know like who the starters are for the Bengals, as opposed to just, you know, reading a story that says, oh, here are the five needs. Like you actually know.
Yeah.
So I guess that tees me off to start talking about the Bengals. Things have changed in Cincinnati over the course of the last couple of years. And, I'm sure from when you were director of pro personnel, you know, I know it's a college thing, but from what I've learned the draft is very cohesive. And just because you're the pro director doesn't mean you're not looking at film of the college players.
That's right.
What stands out to you first about the last couple of drafts for Cincinnati? Like, what do you think's changed for them philosophy wise?
Again, from just from a team building standpoint, I think it's bigger than just even the draft. I think Cincinnati is figuring out, I mean, and I think everybody there in Cincinnati knows how this is supposed to be done as far as how you build your football team, what the primary positions of importance are. You know, if you were to start dispositionally, you know, quarterback, wide receiver, corner, pass rusher, I mean, they've tried to knock those positions out and make sure that they have the guys, and they do. They have a quarterback. They have a wide receiver. They're trying to draft young corners. You know how I feel about many of the young corners there. I tweet about Cam Taylor-Britt seems like every other day. So they went and got a pass rusher, a guy who can be a game closer in Trey. I think now, though, holistically looking at it, like what is still keeping them from getting to where they ultimately want to go, it's that offensive line. I mean, think about how the seasons have ended each of the past 2 years. You lose the Super Bowl because you can't get Aaron Donald taken care of at the end of the game. You lose to Kansas City because Chris Jones basically wrecks your game. So I think now, when you're as good as Cincinnati is, 1 through 53, and they're damn good, those are the positions you have to make sure. And look, it's not like they didn't throw money at the position, at the offensive line. I mean, they tried to revamp the whole thing. They're still trying to revamp it by getting Orlando in here. And let's see what happens with Jonah when they move him and how Lyle comes back from an injury. It still may be a position that they put even more dollars into and invest more draft capital in because it's still not where it needs to be. They still need to get that exactly right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
When you say that it's not where it needs to be, when you're comparing them, that offensive line unit, to whoever you view is the best, I mean, I guess, would you say the Eagles is the best offensive line?
Or the team that's their nemesis right now, or it's Kansas City. Or quite honestly, I'll throw another one in there just for the sake of us having a good football discussion. You're going to hear a lot more about the Detroit Lions this year. And their offensive line is as good as anyone's. They just don't get the recognition yet, but they will. It's coming this year.
What offensive line-wise do you view that Cincinnati is missing?
I would probably say consistently from guard to guard. That's where it has to be. And right tackle is going to be a situation that's up in the air. Mm-hmm. Jonah gets hurt. He has been injury prone, and Lyle's coming off of an ACL.
Yeah.
So and with Orlando, look, Orlando's a good player. There's no doubt about it. Kansas City wanted to re-sign him, but so I think it's really from guard to guard, though. I think it's when you're thinking about those guys, they just have to make sure that they're solid in between there. And when they need to play their best, they have to play their best. They just do. I mean, not every team is going to have, like the Philadelphia Eagles. They're not going to have Jason Kelce, and they're not going to have, like, Kansas City has Creed Humphrey. They're not going to have all pros at every position. But they just have to make sure that that's where they're solid, and that the guys who they have on the perimeter stay healthy and stay on the football field, because they're just too good. There's just too many good pass rushing teams. And they can't have Joe getting hit. They just can't. He can't overcome it all the time.
And that's been the story, right? Like, as you mentioned, it's not just that. It's the offensive line. The offensive line has gotten injured
the
last two seasons in the postseason Brian Callahan, the Bengals offensive coordinator, told me that Alex Kappa, when he went down, was playing as good as any guard in the NFL. And they were happy with what Ted Karras did from a leadership standpoint at center. Yep. And then they felt like Cordell Volson was good enough last year. Yeah. I think they want him to take a bigger step. But, I mean, that's a late round draft pick that you really hit on. So with that, now that, they signed Orlando Brown, they potentially have four of their five starters that they know. As you mentioned, we don't know what's going to happen at right tackle, but they have options there. Yeah. The Bengals pick at 28, and yesterday Duke Tobin had his pre-draft press conference, and he really stressed that his philosophy is not a needs-based one. And he said that's when you get yourself into trouble, when you draft a third-round center in the first round just because you're feeling the need to take a center. So with that being said, based off of the research you've done on prospects, who are some, can you give us a list of like a pool of a couple players that you think will be available at 28 that you think the Bengals might have interest in?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Here, let me go through my list. I'll tell you a few. Like, it's so hard because there's a couple guys that when we do our exercises and we do our mocks for TV, it's like, there's just so many different people that could fall. And right now you hear all the information that's coming out now. I mean, it's all over the place right now. Mm-hmm. So I think really where there should probably be a cluster of players that could help Cincinnati. I just talked to Kansas City, by the way, so I apologize. I think corner is where you're going to find a lot of depth. And quite honestly, you're going to find some hybrid players, like a guy like Brian Branch from Alabama, who could absolutely slip down that far. Where when you think about guys who are crossover corner slash safety slash nickels like Dax is, that's the kind of guy they could use, considering, you know, what they lost at safety this year, you know, with guys like Jesse. So I think you could have a guy like, you could have a guy like Brian Branch be down there. You could have guys like Cam Smith from South Carolina, Emmanuel Forbes from Mississippi State. These are all the kind of guys that I know Lou would love to work with, because these are guys who can make plays on the ball and turn the football over, which every defense is looking to do.
Right.
To really up the turnover differential. You know, on the offensive line, if you look at it there, and if you're looking at, okay, so again, it's not so much the quality of the people they have, it's the availability of the people that they have. So you have to draft prospects that are clean, guys who you think give you a reasonable chance of staying on the football field. So there, I mean, I don't know, you know, Paris Johnson's probably not going to make it down that far from Ohio State. You could have a guy like maybe Broderick Jones from Georgia. Who knows? Maybe these tackles slide down, and there's a couple of people, Jalen Duncan from Maryland, who's a developmental prospect. I don't know if he's kind of like, at this point, if the first round is something that you would want to take him in. If you move to the running back spot, look, I think that's a position too that maybe where Cincinnati's picking is probably where, if you're going to draft a running back in the first round, then that's where you draft him. Late in the first, 28 to 32, you know, maybe even, you know, 34, 35, 36. That's where these guys start coming off the board and you get great value. So, I mean, is Bijan going to fall down that far? Probably not. There's probably, you know, Philadelphia, Tampa, Dallas, they could all snatch him up before they even get there. But I think those are the kind of people that you're looking at. And it really is hard to pinpoint a cluster of people that could be there, although I just gave you a few names. And look, he's right. I think you're forced to go best player available at that point, because every GM, every team builder says, we just go, you know, we're not needs-based, we're value-based. No, they're not. They're trying to pick the best player at the position that they need, because, again, I mean, you're not just collecting talent for the sake of collecting it. You're trying to build a football team. I mean, if they were sitting high enough by virtue of a trade or something like that, it's not like they're going to sit there and they're not going to draft Anthony Richardson, because they have a quarterback. They're not going to draft C.J. Stroud, and they would be the best players available. They're still trying to take guys that they need, and it just needs to match up. But I think the corner position, the tackle position, maybe even running back, I think there'll be some good value there for them at those spots.
So the running back question, you know, we've debated it in the media space. Do you take a running back in the first round? And you know, I wrote a story about it yesterday. You know, Kansas City broke the mold with Pacheco being a seventh round pick. Mm-hmm. Do you need to take a running back? But an area that I don't think gets talked about as much for the Bengals needs wise is running back, because over the last 2 years, their passing offense has been fantastic. Yeah. Their running offense has been among some of the worst in the leagues. Last year, they finished number 30 in rushing offense, and they know that they need to be more explosive in that game. And the Bengals are never going to be a run first team, but it is an area where I think they realize they really need to get shored up, and they just don't have a lot of players right now. I mean, Samaje Perine obviously going to Denver, and Joe Mixon's future is kind of up in the air right now. They don't know. I asked Katie Blackburn about it at owners meetings, and she was very vanilla in her response and saying, well, he's the guy right now. So I kind of think they're looking to see what happens with the draft. Mm-hmm. Of the running backs besides Bijan Robinson, who are some of the ones that you think fit the Bengals offensive scheme, and knowing what Frank Pollock designs with the run scheme?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, let's just assume Joe would be there, okay? And that doesn't preclude them from taking another one, because as you just laid out, like, you need depth, you need bodies. It's just a tough position. Look, Jahmyr Gibbs from Alabama would be perfect. He's a perfect complementary back to a guy like to a guy like Joe, although I still think Jahmyr could carry the load. I mean, he's probably about 8 to 9 pounds smaller than a guy like Christian McCaffrey or even Alvin Kamara, but he has the same kind of skill set. Just as fast, probably even better hands than those two guys. I mean, he is an elite pass catcher. he's just a third down nightmare, low 4.3 in the 40, clean health, great kid. It's perfect. That's perfect for what they need. Somebody who could really be that kind of threat, a Reggie Bush type of threat out of the backfield for Joe Burrow. Are you kidding me? I mean, that would be ideal. Let's see here. You know, a guy who I liked a lot, Tajay Spears out of Tulane. He's falling a little bit, though. I think there's some concerns about a knee issue with him that has got a couple teams scared. So depending upon, you know, what Cincinnati's medical staff, you know, just how tough they are as far as grading players from a health perspective or how lenient they are. I mean, look, I think with running backs, I don't know if you ever draft a running back, you know, with the mandate that you have to get two contracts out of them. I mean, a lot of times these guys just get so banged up that they may only be good for one contract. So I don't know if the medical will scare them off or not. It wouldn't scare me, but because his explosiveness and his game-changing ability is, again, something that they need. I think they need that kind of profile. They don't need another – they don't need a guy like Zach Charbonnet from UCLA. They don't need that kind of banger. They need a guy who is swift that can get on the perimeter and kind of give them another threat to go along with all the other guys that they have at the wide receiver position in particular. I know they, you know, look, with Hayden not being there anymore at tight end and them signing Irv Smith, I mean, I still think tight end's a really deep position in this draft too, that they could wind up looking at the value there and going, hey, there's another guy that controlled the middle of the field for us that could really help us in the passing game, maybe give us a presence in the run game with his blocking. So there's a number of different options. That's what makes it fun for this football team. But the running backs, yeah. I mean, I like a bunch of them. If I go down this list, I mean, I like Eric Gray from Oklahoma. As a matter of fact, when you look at Texas, Roschon Johnson, who at any other P5 school would wind up being a starter, but he's sitting behind Bijan Robinson, is another guy you got to like. I just don't know if that profile is the best thing considering what Joe already brings to the table. I think you need the guy who can really be that third down difference maker. And you're going to hear me on draft night talk about Jahmyr Gibbs a lot because I think he is Kamara, he is McCaffrey, he is Austin Ekeler. He's all of that wrapped up into one.
Well, I think some of those names that you mentioned are very interesting, and I'm glad that you provided as much in-depth insight on that position. There's two other positions that I wanted to ask you about. Sure. Defensive tackle. Let's talk about the Bengals situation there. They have DJ Reader, who they love. Mm-hmm. DJ Reader's entering final year of his contract in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. I don't know. He's going to be expensive. Are the Bengals going to be able to retain him after next year? You just don't know at this point. Sure. Yep. And then they have BJ Hill. But when I thought the Bengals were at their best the year that they went to the Super Bowl was when they had that 1-2-3 punch of BJ, Larry, Ogunjobi, and DJ mm-hmm. Reader on the interior. Yep. And then you have Sam Hubbard and Trey Hendrickson. And then, you know, they feel like Joseph Osai is coming along on the edge.
Yeah, sure is.
Who are some interior defensive tackles that you like? And going back to your days when you were helping run the draft, mm-hmm. from a pro personnel standpoint, obviously, we just talked about the Bengals aren't going to draft needs based first at 28. But you'd have to think, you know, and similar to what happened in Philly last year when, you know, they're able to move on from people because they just keep plugging them through in the draft.
Sure. Yeah.
Who would you view as maybe potentially the defensive tackle that could take over after next season if the Bengals can't retain DJ Reader, or who could come in right away and add to that interior defensive line?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's about the profile, right? So DJ and BJ are kind of more like they can get upfield, they can push the pocket, they can get on an edge. But I think when you're looking at this group, if I was Lou Anarumo, I'd want someone who could really give me some true pass rush presence on third down because of who you're dealing with that you're trying to get over the hump against, mm-hmm. right? So you want that guy who can not – look, we got the people on the outside with Sam and Trey that can kind of like box Patrick in. Let's get that guy who when we can just rush with four and take care of somebody – you know, and cover with seven. So we need some pass rush inside. So if I'm looking at my list here, like, I don't think, well, I pretty much know Kalijah Kansey's not going to slip down that far.
I was going to ask him about your pit ties.
Yeah, but that's the kind of guy that I would want. Look, I think the interior rushers in this draft, when I'm looking at this list, and I got a list here of about 25 of them that I've seen. Look, Kalijah is obviously the best pass rusher outside of Jalen Carter. Keanu Benton from Wisconsin is someone who's interesting because I think he is just starting to hit his stride as a pass rusher. And you're talking about a 315-pound D tackle. So he kind of fits the mold of what they already have. But if you saw him down at the Senior Bowl, he is not just a two-gap plugger like he looked like at Wisconsin. As a matter of fact, Chuck Smith, who's now, they used to call him Dr. Pass Rush, who used to run the Pass Rush Summit out in Vegas, who's now working with the outside backers in Baltimore, told me, and this is going to be a name that obviously is going to like give Cincinnati Bengals fans nightmares, but he said right now he's at the same point that Chris Jones was at in his career. And I think he can become that kind of guy, that kind of inside, outside pass rush presence as he continues to get in better shape and develop his body. So I think that kind of person to go along with who they have would be great too. And he'll be there. First round is going to be too high for him, but that's a name that you probably want to keep your eye on. Here's you know what? If you want to talk about sleepers, here's another name to keep your eye on. And his name is Jacqueline Roy from LSU, the defensive tackle. He wasn't even a regular starter at LSU, but this is a guy who was a 4- or 5-star recruit coming out of high school. Well, Kelsey, when I tell you, when he turns it up, it is beautiful to watch. I mean, because you're talking about a 300-plus pound DT that moves like he's 260, 270. Great pass rush moves, speed to turn and chase, strong enough and stout enough to play the run the same way that BJ and DJ can. So again, those are some names that I think on the inside that you should probably keep your eye out on and see if, or eye out for and see if Cincinnati winds up snapping up one of those guys. It's not a real deep draft at the interior position. There's a few good names on the perimeter, although there's going to be question marks about some of those guys too. If you need pass rush, this really isn't the draft as far as I'm concerned. But inside, those are a couple good names to keep an eye on.
Some of the mocks that I've seen is the Clemson, I believe his last name is Brees.
Brian Brzee, yeah.
Brzee.
Yep.
I've seen him mocked a couple of times to Cincinnati at 28.
Yeah, what's interesting about him, again, is if you believe what I'm telling you about the fact that I think they need somebody who can get up the field and push the puck. Brian's not that guy. He's a two-gap. I mean, he's dealt with a couple injuries in his career. He's a bigger dude, kind of a two-gap. I don't want to say a plugger because he can push the pocket and he does play with great effort, but he's just not, he's not going to be a 6-7, 8 sack guy a year, and you're not going to want him on the field on third down. And a long time ago, an old defensive coordinator named Jerry Gray, who used to play for the Rams and, you know, was a coordinator in Buffalo, and he's been a number of different places, said, look, I would argue that interior pass rush is even more important than edge pass rush.
Because I 100% what it, agree.
Exactly. So why? I mean, obviously, it's the whole Tom Brady rule. If you get a quarterback who's getting pressured in his face, they hate it. I'm sure Joe Burrow would tell you the same thing. So those kind of guys, I mean, you don't need too many of those. You don't need too many guys who can hold the point of attack on first and second down because the game is won on third down.
So the other position that I wanted to ask you about is, and I know you're probably wondering why I'm asking you about this specific position, but wide receiver.
Yeah, sure.
Fully aware.
I know why you're asking.
And fully aware. And I asked Duke Tobin specifically of this question with this in mind. The Bengals want to keep Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins,
mm-hmm. yep.
and Joe Burrow together.
Yeah.
They are in the middle of negotiation processes with Burrow. Nothing's happened yet. And then after Burrow comes on the list of importance, priority-wise, is T. Higgins and Logan Wilson.
Yeah.
Yes, the Bengals would love in that dream world to be able to keep everyone. But as you know, mm-hmm. it just doesn't go that way.
Sure.
With the future of T. Higgins uncertain in this regard, in terms of obviously he'll be on the team in the upcoming season, but after that you just don't know yet.
Yeah.
And Tyler Boyd is on the end of his deal right now. This is his mm-hmm. final season.
Mm-hmm.
right now, pretty much the only person you can mark down for sure that will be a wide receiver for this team next season is Jamar. Yeah. So at what point would you be comfortable if you were, you know, running this draft for Cincinnati? Sure. Would you be comfortable taking a wide receiver?
Yeah, I think second round on down is where a lot of these guys are going to get grouped. I don't think the NFL teams right now believe that this is a stellar wide receiver class at all. But when the run starts, you're going to see a bunch of names start popping off the board here real quick. I mean, obviously the cream of the crop is going to be Jackson Smith and Jigba. It's going to be Zay Flowers. I think you're going to see a name like Michael Wilson from Stanford is going to go maybe, you know, in the top of the second round because of his route running ability, his catch radius. Quentin Johnson is going to maybe go at the end of the first, top of the second, although he needs to stop dropping the football, make sure he takes care of that. Because that's probably job number one wide receiver when you say catch the ball. So I think there's a couple of interesting names there. Rashee Rice is another guy that's interesting because of all the production he had down at SMU and how tough he is. Another one of those guys with a great catch radius, tough, strong. So I think there's a couple names that, from a profile standpoint, that those are the kind of guys that you need. Look, Jamar's your long ball heavy hitter. T can do the same things as you see when Jamar's not in there. I mean, T can be that guy. He can be that outside lane guy, probably not your typical inside lane player, although he can go across the middle too. And I think a lot of these guys that I mentioned are kind of like that. So I would say in the second, third round, that's where you'll see a lot of these names start, like a run will be started on them. And once they go, if you're Cincy, and with the way you just laid out what that position looks like in the future, because of the different contracts that are coming up at that position and others, you probably do have to think about, hey, we need to cover our rear ends here in the event that we can't keep all these guys. Namely, but I don't know. I think I remember also that, you know, when people were sniffing around T. Higgins, you know, Cincy management said, hey, look, if you want a good receiver, go draft your own. Stop trying to take ours. So I think they're going to do everything they can to make sure that those guys don't get out of there.
Would you say that if you're looking at T compared to Tyler Boyd in drafting, you know, their potential replacements, who's more important to the Bengals offense, that slot receiver? And I think Tyler Boyd is so underrated. I mean, when he went out in the AFC Championship game, that offense missed him. Do you think it's more important to have an outside guy or a slot guy, given the discussion we just had about those?
Yeah, I think if you had to pick, you want the guy who you can always, I think you can always take an outside guy and put him inside. You can't always take an inside guy and put him outside because it's different out there. It's so isolated out there. You have the sideline to one side. You have the whole middle of the field where defenses can kind of like pin you in inside out and really kind of constrict the field on you, which means you've got to be crafty now. You've got to be real good. I remember asking Devontae Adams this question just this past December. You know, what makes the best wide receivers the best wide receivers? And he said, those are the guys who you can line them up at X or Z and put them on the outside where you know it's just one-on-one and you have to work within a confined space, but you can still get the job done. I can beat anybody moving inside because I got all this grass. I can back up off the ball. They can put me in motion. So I think the outside lane players are the ones who – that's probably where you start. And I think T can do both. He looks like an X, right? He looks like that kind of guy, but he has enough craftiness and good enough feet that he can move inside too. So I think that's where you start.
I'll close out our conversation to let you go here, but I just wanted to get your perspective on one last thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good players on the Bengals roster right now, and it's a good problem for them to have. But outside of Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase, let's say, I told you, you know, DJ Reader's deal is going to be up after this season. So is Tyler Boyd's. I believe, I don't quote me, Trey Hendrickson might be after this year or the year after. Okay. And then Cheeto signed a 3-year deal as well. So that was last year. So he'll be coming up. Those kind of core people, especially on the defensive side of the ball, Who do you think's the one that the Bengals have got to make sure that they're able to keep in Cincinnati to keep this team playing the way it is?
Yeah. On the defensive side, I definitely would say, like, depending upon, like, first of all, I would have said it was Jesse, okay, before he got out of there. But I think now, look, I think you have to make sure that as long as your defense, as long as your pass rushers are healthy, that's just where it's at in AFC. Mm-hmm. You have to have guys that can hunt the quarterback. So as long as they feel as though, like, also remember that contracts are supposed to represent future performance value, and they have more info than any of us do about how these guys are maintaining themselves from day to day and what they still think they have left in the tank. Mm-hmm. If you still think a guy like Trey Hendrickson has enough left in the tank, then you make sure he doesn't get out of there. Because this thing about what this team would be like if he was gone right now, if he's gone, look, maybe Joe Asai becomes that guy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think Trey seems to play the way that really exemplifies what they want to be. That's a Lou Anarumo type guy. That's a Cincinnati Bengal type guy. So I would think that he kind of seems like he's kind of a glue guy at one time, in one respect, and also a guy who, when the game's on the line, they're going 91, go get him.
Yeah.
That would be it for me.
Yeah, you can't understate his importance. I wasn't covering the Bengals when he wasn't here, but I know that his presence has really changed a lot of what they have done defensively. You have a target guess number, what you think number 9 is going to land that deal with?
As far as average per year or guaranteed dollars?
Both.
Well, average, you know, it'll be over $52 million, $53 million a year. Guaranteed dollars at signing, which is always – that's the key figure, right? That's the key figure. I would bet – Joe is somewhere up there in – holy moly. I mean, what Russell got at signing – 120, 130. I would bet he's somewhere in the 160s, 170s. Like, it'll be nuts. And why wouldn't it be?
Right.
He'll get the most money guaranteed at signing outside of Deshaun Watson.
Yep. That's looks where it's headed based off that Jalen Hurts deal. It seems become the
he's
floor.
He's gonna blow that deal away.
Well, there won't be a shortage of things to talk about with the Cincinnati Bengals for you on TV. Sure. Lewis, thank you so much for joining me. I look forward to watching your coverage on the draft next weekend.
You bet. Thanks a lot.